Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I'm your host, Daniel Fisher, and along with me is I have a special guest today, Mr. Sean Brooks. How you doing today, Sean?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. You know, it's been over a week now.
A week.
Almost 2 weeks that we haven't got to see each other and giving each other hugs. But we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. And along with me also is the skipper to my Gilligan, Mr. Mike Perna.
You know, in a way, I'm surprised it's taken us this long to get that reference. Of all the weird things that you've mentioned me, yeah, I'm honestly surprised it took that long.
Well, I grew up watching TBS and watching Gilligan's Island, and it was one of the best shows ever.
I'm even going to refrain from calling you little buddy, you know, just, you know, because I can. I'm a better man, is what I'm saying.
Well, that's good. I'm glad, because I'm not really that little, but I do have my Gilligan hat. I can put it on.
There we go. So, before we get into all the general shenanigans, what has people been playing? What have you guys been up to? Wow! I send you guys to a convention and you don't actually even play any games.
I was busy working that game.
He was busy working, but yet. We did play a game, Sean.
We did play one game, yes.
And I whooped your butt.
Well, I mean, you can't bring a mage into a HeroQuest game solo.
I know. We played HeroQuest. We got down and played that game together.
I didn't have the broadsword.
I believe that's a requirement.
Yeah.
Broadsword. But yeah, it was the first time in almost, I guess... Oh, man, 25 years and I got a chance to play it.
Yeah, it's about the same for me, too.
So people were looking at us, too, as I was getting it out, separating the cards and getting the miniatures out. And this one guy comes over and is like, that box is in excellent condition. It's like, I know. I take care of my boxes.
It was funny, too, because everybody came by and seen it. It's like, oh, I want to play that. I want to play that. But nobody played it. I'm like,
yeah,
come on.
We offered.
Here's one thing. And I'm preparing already. To get the hate mail, please feel free to send it to me. I understand this. HeroQuest is on my shelf because of the nostalgia factor. It is entirely because of that was what I played with my brothers. My dad would run the game. I have very little desire to play HeroQuest anymore. At least in its pure HeroQuest-y form, the desire that I have to have HeroQuest on the shelf that isn't tied to nostalgia is completely tied to those miniatures are awesome and I'm going to absolutely pillage that box whenever I need it.
So I'll tell you this, you know, everybody asks that same question, how does it hold up compared to modern games? And I'm just gonna say this, it's okay.
I think it probably held up. We didn't get to play it much, but I think it probably held up.
And yes, I made a big deal about saying that I'm going to get hate mail, but I'm not saying it's bad. It's not bad. But
it was one of the first of its time, though.
Oh, in its time, like when I was a little kid playing that game, it blew my ever-loving mind.
And a lot of people don't realize this. Mutant Chronicles, the RPG for that, came out right after HeroQuest did, not the RPG, but the actual board game, and it was like HeroQuest.
Yeah, no, there. I can talk for days about how important that game was, about how life-changing that game was when I was playing it as a kid, but at the same point, if you put it in front of me right now, I'm like, okay, this is what we're doing.
And you know, I plan on doing that the next time I get to hang out with you. I'm bringing HeroQuest, and we're going to play it.
Well, I have a copy. You don't have to transport yours.
Where it's at. You just come up and play it at TavernCon.
Yeah, that's right. So excellent segue, by the way.
I know, right?
ladies and gentlemen, I have a firm policy of never announcing dates and times until they're locked in. This, sadly, is because there have been times in my life when I've announced events saying, oh, of course we're going to be able to do that, and then, you know, suddenly realizing, oh, guess what? We don't have that room. But that's why you haven't heard about TavernCon to date. What's happening right now is that I have the date. It has been officially locked in. We are good to go. We have now pretty much every member of the board has gone into the aether to be like, hey, you know how you donated stuff last year? You want to do it again?
Yeah, I've still got to get on some of mine.
Yeah, we have all started the mad dash to try and fill up the raffle and the prize pool, because TavernCon is on June 9th at Stonecrest Community Church in Warren, New Jersey. Doors open up at 10 in the morning. They do not close until 8 at night. We have open gaming. We have a lot of amazing prizes. Again, we're still working on the prize pool, so I can't exactly tell you what that is yet. But I know for a fact we've got a couple really cool things that you've seen us mention in the tavern that are coming in already, and I'm looking forward to adding to that. We also have some old favorites, like the Pretense Meta Tournament, the tournament that actually helped build the relationship that we have with Jason Tagmeier, is because he was fascinated by the fact that we ran a tournament of his game. That's going to be coming back. We also, due to just outrageous popularity last year, we tried to do a miniatures paint and take, and I am going to just absolutely wrangle Brett Anderson to come back again and do that, because that was so popular, his table was never empty, and so I'm going to do that again, so you can learn how to paint miniatures, and you can paint them up and take them home with you. Some other things, we're going to have a ton of food, obviously. I'm currently trying to get a couple of our local designers that are in the area to come out again. There's been no confirmation, and so, as I said, I don't mention things until they're confirmed, but I know from at least one of the people that we've seen come in the past, he's very interested, and hopefully the scheduling works out for that. I absolutely love this event. I'm just flabbergasted by the fact that, you know, there are even, like, we've heard people already who are like, huh, I wonder if I can drive out to that. So I'm super excited. It's just absolutely an amazing time. It's a time where we make a good chunk of the money that we spend the rest of the year. And I really hope that if you are in the area, that you come out to it. And if not, and you want to drive, I'm still going to be very excited to see you there. If you are listening to this and you're like, look, there's no way I'm going to make it out there, it's absolutely impossible between scheduling and travel, can't make it happen, but you want to participate, you can always donate to the prize pool. We have had entire sections of the raffle donated by regulars in the past. So if you're listening and you want to make a donation, please feel free to send it to our PO box, and that information is all on the site, so I'm not going to worry about repeating it here.
That was a mouthful.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it was. You think, you know, there are certain things that I can just kind of roll off my tongue, like I've practiced it over and over again, simply due to the necessity of saying it over and over again. Explaining and hyping TavernCon is definitely one of those things.
Yeah, next year, guys, if you're still listening, you will be, because you're just hooked to this podcast. We're going to have a canned message, and then we're just going to have a thing, insert date here.
Insert date here. Yeah, we'll see how they. But you don't get my hype train. I okay. Demand my hype train.
Well, the way we'll get the hype train is I'm gonna give you 5 Red Bulls. You'll be good to go.
And after my heart explodes, we'll have a memorial at TavernCon.
Yeah, I'll have some miniatures made of you.
Uh-huh. Well, we can all have Daniel come up and do the paint and take too.
There we go.
That paint, I have to tell you about that. Oh man, it was crazy.
Well, that's
paint take I did at GaryCon.
That's something you actually did at GaryCon.
Yes.
Which we will get to. That, if you haven't guessed by now, by the fact that Sean is with us, it's not only because Romo is busy packing for his trip. It is also due to the fact that this is going to be a GaryCon heavy episode, but plus some other stuff which has been announced kind of in the tavern and in some other places. But before we get into that, I do kind of want to talk about the archive dive.
All right, guys. So now we're going to talk about our one and only segment that really has stuck, and that is what we call our archive dive. And that's where we talk about a game that is a little over a year old, at least, that the hype train has just died down on it, that, you know, we love to play and we get it to the table. And it's my turn this time. First edition Dungeons and Dragons. I'm talking about the basic set, baby. You know, that Holmes Edition box that the kids and Stranger Things are playing. And not even Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. We didn't even have the original Monster Manual out. But I got to play it with our man, Derek White, the Geek Preacher. He was our GM, and it was amazing.
Now, I do have to ask, especially because of the fact that this was happening at GaryCon.
Yes.
Were you playing with the dice you had to actually take the crayon to?
No, because it was a last in a moment. I was talking to our guy, Daniel Fisher, over for Hammered Game Tables, and so I was over at his table, and my dice were downstairs in my bag, and I get a text message. It was actually sent to our group from Derek, said, "Hey, I had a lot of people just not show up to my game this time. Anybody interested?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'll be there in a second." Well, Daniel had about 5 pounds of dice on his table that he was just letting everybody take. I said, "Listen, I need to play D&D with this guy, but I forgot my dice downstairs. Can I, I'm going to steal some dice?" And he's like, "Yeah, just fill your pockets full. That's how it was with me. And if I had known he was going to leave with 3 pounds of dice, I would have took more." But anyway, so I grabbed dice, and I run up there, and I get to play with Derek White, and it was so much fun.
Normally, with the Archive Dive, we're talking about board games. This is our first role-playing game for the Archive Dive. Yes. So yes. What I want you to do for this, to make it legit, is to explain to people, because we have a lot of people, like we do have some grognards that listen to the podcast who are like, "Why are we bothering to explain first edition?" But a lot of the people that listen to us are either fairly new or don't even know about this stuff. So, I mean, granted, it's evolved so drastically over the years. So I'm not looking for a full treatise. But what are some of the, because we can do it. We can make that happen. Yeah. But what are some highlights of things that make first edition something that's worth exploring while fifth edition exists?
Okay, so first edition, there's a lot of differences about it. Okay, and this, you know, as I said, this isn't even Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. This was the module you get with the 6 dice and a couple books. Well, anyway, so one of the things, like we're used to now, if you have to make a roll, you roll and you have to be over a certain number. With first edition, you have to be under a certain number, and if you're not, you know, and you want your stats to be high because you want to be able to roll all those numbers underneath it, and so that's just one thing. It never carried over to the more advanced versions of Dungeons and Dragons, but it was fairly interesting because, you know, I've not got to play original Dungeons and Dragons like that. The other thing was, it's racist. and not the racist is what you think it is. But, like, if you're a human, you can be a thief, you can be a bard, you could be anything in the world. But if you're a halfling, you're a halfling. If you're a dwarf, you're a dwarf. And if you're a elf, you're an elf. You cannot have a class.
That was, I remember those days when the races were basically classes.
Yeah. So, here I am, I decided to play a halfling. And the way I usually play halflings is I'm a thief. I love being a halfling thief because one of my favorite things to do is have somebody tie a piece of rope around me and throw me across crevices, and I'll tie it off and things like that. And as Sean knows, I really do enjoy halfling thieves. So, but, you know, here I am, and I have to take penalties because I'm a halfling. And it was just, I've never been used to it before, and it was just something that they thought of, you know. When they were doing that. And another thing that you may not know, in first edition, I believe that women had to take penalties and strength checks.
They did. I was just gonna say, playing first edition is an interesting time capsule because, yes, women could not play certain classes because they had to take penalties to strength.
Yes, and so, again, I wouldn't say it's a sexist, racist game, but yet it was the first version of something.
It is a product of its time.
Right. It came out of the 70s. It was, and the guy who wrote it, Gary Gygax, when the 70s hit, he was, you know, well into his 30s, I believe, maybe early 40s. And, you know, at that time, that's just what they did. And you know, it was still a great game. It changed, and you know, they changed it a lot, but you know, it was just very interesting to play. Made me really excited, and I want to buy a box set like that and put up just to have.
Nice.
I'm grinning so big right now. It was just so much fun.
Well, I know there are definitely people who, like, I will say that for me, D&D is 5th edition. Like, I think 5th edition, for me personally, is everything that I wanted and everything I loved from the old school and all of the streamlining I like in the modern design of role-playing games. However, I know for a fact that we have people out there who don't even care about 5th edition. It's not like I don't think I've seen anybody who's like adamantly against it, but I know people who are like, oh, I need to play the 3rd edition. I need to play the 2nd edition. We even have people who want to play the 4th edition.
Oh man. And that's our friend Sean here.
There's nothing wrong with 4th edition. It is a great miniatures game.
I've said it before and I will say it again. I think even in this phone call, I will say that 4th edition is very good at what it does. I just don't want to do what it does.
Well, and that's the thing, though, that we a lot of people are like, well, D&D is just theater of the mind. No, it's not. It was based off a miniatures game. It was a war game and used miniatures. So miniatures were – they expected to use miniatures in Dungeons & Dragons. So 4th edition, there was – you know, I played it. I'm not going to complain too much about it. You know, it was the first edition my daughter played outside of Hackmaster. Yes, my daughter was 7 and played Hackmaster, so.
God help us all. All right. So let's get into the meat of what we want to talk about, because y'all did go to GaryCon. Now, I, in the last episode, which I had to run solo because y'all were at GaryCon, I mentioned the fact that you guys were going. Obviously, I've heard a bunch of the stories that have come out of that trip, but you know, maybe there's a good portion of people who are listening who have no idea. So give us a rundown. First off, what were y'all doing there? And second, like, what are some of the things that you guys got to see?
Well, I'll tell you this. I did get to be with Sean the first time ever in the same room and play games with him. It was amazing.
It was fun.
The first thing I did when I jumped out of the van, I threw the van in the park when they were standing out there. I jumped out and I ran and gave him and Derek both big hugs and then we unloaded.
Then we unloaded.
Yeah.
It's always anticlimactic when it's like, oh my goodness, I love seeing you. This is so great. We got boxes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Yeah. We had to set up the room, which was downstairs, no elevators. Luckily, we had some bellhops to help us out.
Yeah. So, yeah, there was a service elevator that we didn't think we could use, but the bellhops just loaded all our stuff up, all the games, and took them down there, and then that's the first thing we did was set up that game area.
You guys were basically bringing back the board game library to GaryCon, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how long it had been gone. Some people, I heard 3 years. Some people said 1 year.
Yeah.
That the guy that was running it, something happened, and he couldn't just be there anymore with the library. And they charged Derek with finding another group to bring the library back.
And they found us.
Yes.
Yes.
The first Christian gaming ministry to ever be invited to a convention to be the board gaming library.
If you folks at home are wondering why the guys are giggling as that said, apparently Derek said that statement like 15 times throughout the course of the weekend.
Every conversation we had.
Every day. You guys gotta remember. And if anybody asks, this is what you say.
Derek, I love you, brother. I absolutely love you. But yeah, no, I don't doubt that at all.
But it was awesome, man.
So you guys are at GaryCon, and I'm sure you can come up with a bunch of stories. I'm going to hit you up I'm going to give you some time. I'll give you the question now. We'll talk about some other stuff, but I'm giving you this now to think about. It's a question that I've been dropping on youth group kids since I got into youth ministry. Every time they'd go on a trip, I said, if you can only tell me one story, what would that one story be? So that that's gonna happen. I'm giving you the heads up. I'm gonna ask that. But before we do, one thing that is particularly unique about this particular convention is that this is GaryCon, which is put on in memory of Gary Gygax, and it is actually put on by his kids.
Yes, it's a memorial.
Specifically, y'all got to hang out with his kids.
Yeah, we got to talk to him some, and I've got my Monster Manual completely signed out by Tim Kask and Frank Mentzer and all that stuff. And then I got my DMG signed by Luke and Ernie, which are his two oldest boys. And it was pretty interesting, you know, getting to talk with them. And Luke actually came down to the area and talked with us a bit. And not too much, but in between. Because they were, if they weren't running a game, then they were running to something else that they had to do. They were very busy. And, you know, a lot of people are probably thinking, like, well, you know, they're the higher up guys. They get to relax and play games. No, they were working their tails off. And this is all just to celebrate their father's life.
If you've ever run a con, you'd know that they're working their butts off.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned a whole bunch of names there. And again, because I know there are people who are listening who are just getting into gaming or are gaming curious. You dropped a whole bunch of names there. Those guys, I mean, obviously the Gygax boys were small when Gary Gygax was putting D&D together.
Yeah.
But you mentioned your Tim Kask and Frank Mentzer and all that. These guys helped make D&D what it is, and y'all were just hanging out.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, Tim Kask, he's hilarious. The only thing I could say about him is, bless his heart, he's going around in a little rascal and a little scooter. And the only thing that was running through my mind was some old man said, you know, you damn kids, get out of my dungeon. that's the only thing that was going through my mind when I saw Tim Kask. Now, if y'all don't know who he is, he was the first editor-in-chief of Dragon Magazine. And if it wasn't for Dragon Magazine, we probably wouldn't have a lot of the artwork that we have for D&D, especially some of the older stuff and some of the artists that got pulled into D&D. Because originally, he was hiring the artists for the magazine, and then they got brought in to do commission work for the books. Frank Mentzer, I'm not really sure too much on exactly what he all everything that he did, but I do know that he put together one of the first box sets, because there were three primary box sets. You had the Holmes, the Mentzer box set, and I think the Marvolo is how it's pronounced box set, and he had his own box set, and people will argue which is the better box set because the books were different.
Oh, if we haven't already gotten people making complaints about edition wars at the beginning of this one, which type of box is the best is going to, oh my goodness.
So, like, the red box, when you think of the red box, is Mentzer box, I believe. And I'm the Holmes edition guy. I love the artwork on the Holmes box. And so, but that's just me. Anyway, but those guys, and if you ever look in some of the older rule books, you'll see spells like Tensor's Floating Disc, Melf, which is magical elf.
That's a good story, too.
Yeah, Melf is Luke's main character when he first started playing D&D, and his dad was like, well, how are you going to name him? Well, he's an elf, and he's magical, because elves weren't magical when they first started playing D&D. And so he said, I'm going to call him Melf. And then Tensor was Ernie's character. And so Tensor had a floating disc, and that was something to carry other people that were incapacitated or your stuff. And so it's kind of
which is exactly what people have been using it for ever since.
Yes, it's, you know, and that's where those names came from after his kids. Every one of his kids were his original playtesters. So when you're saying that D&D isn't for kids, his kids were playing at like 7 and 8 whenever they could read. So they've been playing their entire life.
I really want you guys to tell me a little bit of the story, because I'm excited, because trust me, these guys were sending me messages throughout the entirety of the event. It was funny too, because half of them, somebody would usually say like, oh, we're sorry Mike couldn't be here. So, you know, I'm not bitter at all.
Yeah, you are.
But I want you guys to tell some of the stories about what you guys did and saw at this event, because it definitely looked like you guys were having fun. And one thing that, you know, we get crap for quite a bit is that, you know, sometimes it's hard that people who are on the outside of this look at this and go, oh, well, how is that ministry?
Yeah.
So I do definitely want to hear the fun stories because they're fun and I want to hear them. But I do also want you guys to kind of share some stuff that was more not necessarily like I sat down with so-and-so and shared the gospel, but just how you ministered to the folks at this event.
Well, I can start with some stuff from my paint and take. So on Saturday, I spent the entire day teaching people how to paint. And if you didn't have a ticket, that's fine. I'll let you walk up. As long as there's room at the table, you can paint a miniature. So, you know, the thing is, though, you can't not do what we did and not have conversations with people. And a lot of people don't realize that, yeah, Christ did preach. But Christ also sat down with people and had conversations over food, over other things. I don't know. He could have been playing a game, for all I know. And that's what we did. You know, there were some very intimate conversations about people dealing with stuff that I had. You know, and I'm not, I can't give you details of it. But, you know, there's at least three good conversations that I had where I actually, for the conversation to flow, I had to share my story and my children's story and my story with my wife. You know, and if you ever catch me on an off day, send me a text message, I'll give you that story. It's my testimony. And I used that story for at least one conversation, and the lady that I was talking to, who was an atheist, you know, she came to me and said, you know, we're put here for a reason to have this conversation with me. And she got up, she got through painting her miniature and left, you know. And, you know, I had another conversation with a older lady, and she's like, you know, She wanted people to do things with her like this. And she's like, this is the first time I ever played D&D and I'm at a convention with somebody here. And, you know, how can I find that? And, I talked about finding, you know, helped her try to find people in her area and stuff like that. I mean, it's different things. We're not always going to share the gospel with people, but it's our life should be the gospel, what we do and how we act. And that's just my experience. So.
Right, and most of the time I sit at the table just handing out games, but I got to have a lot of good conversations with people, a lot. Like, we had one guy come down there, he owns a bookstore, but he's wanting to get board games in, and he's asking me, what games should I get? So I'm sitting down with him, explaining to him all the games that you know, are good to have for starting games, and it was just, we were talking for about an hour, just talking about what he does, about what we do. It was an amazing conversation. There's a lot of those conversations, too.
No. Yeah, I mean, it's just the personal conversations that we have with these people. We're not these people that stand outside and preach to them as they're walking into conventions, but we're the people in there that are bringing them games, showing them how to play the games, hoping they have a good time, finding out if they need anything, and, you know, that's it. That's what we do. I mean, and a lot of times we don't get to play the games, especially when we have a game day. We don't get to play games. Mm-hmm. Mike can attest to that.
Yeah.
He's just there recommending games, handing games out, explaining how games work, and that's just it. That's what we do.
Yep. And I kind of prefer it that way better, too, because, you know, at least, you know, I can still interact with people without having to sit down and be tied up in a game for an hour or two. So.
Well, it's funny because, you know, we talk about Tavern Con and everything. Like, that's one of the things, like, every time somebody comes to me and says, you know, I want to run games at Tavern Con, I go, awesome. I'm like, here are the perks. You know, you get to play games. I feed you and I give you a couple raffle tickets for fun. And they're like, awesome. That's great. I go, yeah, here's the other part. Here's the part where I tell you that you probably won't sit down to play games much. And if you do, it's the game that somebody else wants to play, not the game that you do.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I tell them that, you know, your job is to make sure that if somebody's standing around hovering over the games, you're asking them how you can recommend a game to them. You are going, and if I tell you I need you to do this, you don't tell me, I'll get around to it. If I'm telling you you need to do something, you need to go up and do it. Mm-hmm. And it's always interesting to me that just that response, like, yeah, no, we have a lot of fun with what we do, but at the same point, it's a ton of work. And it's a lot of not doing what you want to do to make sure that somebody else is having a good time.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I got to play a game at one of my game nights. It's normally I'm sitting out just watching people play or, you know, setting up games for somebody else. I've played maybe 5 games in the 5 years I've been doing this. So, at my game nights.
People always say that, like, oh, you must be playing games constantly. I go, actually, not really, because normally if games are getting played, I'm going around explaining them.
Mm-hmm. Or, giving in recommendations for something.
Yeah. There are people who end up playing more in a month than I do in, like most of the year.
Yeah.
I even remember, what's it called? There was one time when I was like, oh, you know, I've had a slow week. And I'm like, you've played more than I have the first half of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah, I have a weekly game night that's on Monday nights, and we normally play about one game a week, but and lately is we haven't been able to do it because we just haven't had time, you know. So
well, and that gets me back to what y'all are doing at GaryCon, because what's going on at GaryCon is you guys went to run the library. Like, yep. You guys weren't just con attenders. You did get to have these cool moments with folks who, like, made D&D. You did get to have, you know, cool times being able to sit and talk with people. But at the same point, you're running the game library.
Yeah.
That's work.
It is, oh, yeah. But it was great work. I enjoyed it. That's probably the best, most fun I've had ever working. So.
Yeah.
I mean, it was great.
Amazing. Yeah.
So, all right. We're going to come back to it. Because we want to talk about something else as well as GaryCon here, but I do want to kind of wrap up with this. I warned you. I gave you a heads up. I hope you've been thinking about it. The entire trip, which y'all were there for, is GaryCon 4 days or 3 days?
3 days.
It's 4. Thursday ended Sunday.
Yeah. Wednesday's okay. Kind of something too, but.
So out of.
Same length as Gen Con.
Out of those days. 4 days of getting out there, doing the craziness, Sean outrunning Snowpocalypse 2.
That was
so all that stuff, if you can take the entirety of that experience and boil it down to one story, what would that story be?
For me, well, besides the one I just already told about the guy at the with the game store, I would have to say it'd be going to the original store with Derek White. We went to the store. He had to get something there, so we went to that store and went. You know,
talking about the dungeon.
The dungeon, yes. I couldn't ever remember the name, but we went to the store and because he had to pick up something, so we went in there. We walking around and talking to the people in there, and they were telling us about, you know, all the history of that store. We're just like, yeah, we kind of know the history of it. It was just, but spending time with him, just me and him alone, was you know, getting to have good conversations and stuff like that. Just. That was really good.
Derek will get you going.
Yeah, he got me going too. So it was a good time. It was very good to sit down and talk to somebody about, you know, spirituality stuff and, you know, something I don't get to do much because 9 times out of 10 I'm telling games or explaining games. So
I think for me, this is going to sound kind of cheesy, was sitting down with Sean. Because we actually got to sit down in the same room, play games together, but we actually got to talk about some of our ideas to help better inroads and make inroads, you know, more awesomer and take some weight off Mike's shoulders and, you know, bring back inroads plays, you know, like with a force to be reckoned with that I'm working on right now. So, but yeah, it's just sitting down with Sean and getting to hang out with him, and you know, next year to be sitting down with Sean and Jeff and Mike, hopefully, you know.
Well, yeah. I'm still a giant maybe because, you know, small child, and you know, I can only do so much traveling for conventions. However, we have on lock, and we're gonna make him be on lock, not just because he missed this episode. Mr. Romo is quoted, and I have the picture to prove it. That he's in for GaryCon in 2019. Oh,
yeah. He's already wanting to run some games too.
Yeah, yeah. No, and he is awesome. In.
Now my wife says I'm still a big maybe, but that means I just have to suck up for a year.
You need to get some incredible levels of groveling.
Yes, well, no, not groveling. I need to fill up her battery, her little battery.
speaking of doing of all this service and recommending games and all this stuff, it's all tying together beautifully. I absolutely love it when a plan comes together. And also speaking of things that got discussed and talked about, not only just at GaryCon, because I was part of this conversation and I wasn't at GaryCon, but we were talking about how some ways that we can kind of expand what we do, and not just expand, but also kind of change and tweak what we do. So a lot of what end up happening for the Inroads team is that we usually go into churches. In fact, Sean, how many churches have you been in before? That's like three or four, right?
I've got three that's going. I got two that I do, and I helped another one that's around me too. He started up once. Eric, he is in the tavern.
Yes.
I got two of those, and I'm running two currently right now. Those might be going on the back burner just because they're not bearing fruit well.
Right.
Just because there's nobody showing up. It's the same crew, and it's always – and it's – and I'm going to hand them off to somebody else that's going to, you know.
Right. It's not like we're going to be like, okay, we'll forget these guys.
Right. Exactly. And I'll still go to these things every once in a while too, just to, you know, show up and say, hey. But because one of them's still at my home church, so
yeah,
that's something that, you know, that's a ministry that they've been allowing me to do for the past 4 years, and I can't let that, you know, go.
Right, but it's good to every once in a while evaluate, like Sean was saying, the idea that we always say that we want our game days to provide some kind of goal. Either it's to get people who are in churches together and building important relationships, whether it's going outside of the walls of the church to get people in and maybe introduce them to the church and to the people in the church. There's all sorts of different reasons to run a game day. And Sean was like, how do we expand this concept? You know, what can we do? And so we started talking about it, and then we brought it to the board, and everyone's like, this is an amazing idea. And it all focused around game stores. And Sean, this was your brainchild. I just kind of came alongside you and said, yes, this is awesome. So what kind of is the pitch of what you're hoping to see happen?
So basically what I'm wanting to do is just basically get a group, get a team together and of that play various games. Like, you know, I want, you know, the Dungeons & Dragons guys. I want Magic guys. I want board game, war games. Just run the gambit of people who play games. And basically go to the store and just, you know, use that store as our focus. We go there, we play games with the people that are there. We, you know, help out the people in the stores. When they do like big magic events and stuff like that, maybe just like run a grill or, you know, cook up hot dogs or something for them, you know, people that are there. Just basically go there and just be in community with the people at the store that are there playing and they're running it, you know. So...
Well, the thing I love about the idea when you first posed it was the fact that you're like, I'm going to build a team. And it almost felt kind of like something like the A-Team was being built or something like
that. Right.
Like I almost wanted it to have like the 80s or the 90s montage is like, so-and-so, they're our Magic the Gathering specialist. So it's like I almost wanted to have like, because I know some of your team members because they've come to TavernCon before.
Right.
And I almost had like an image of them pass by and just be like have some kind of weird code name for them.
Right. And that's one of the things too. It's like I got a lot of people I work with that are normally part of my groups and stuff that most of them are board gamers. There's a couple of them that does DMing that run Dungeons & Dragons. There's a bunch of guys I know at my church that play Magic. If I could just pull those guys in, it'd be great. But... But I'm just trying to find some people who do, like the wargaming stuff. I mean, I have stuff for wargaming. I just need somebody to, you know, be there on those nights and be with them, you know?
Well, I, you know, our big buzzword is intentionality. And I love that with this because it is like, look, every one of these types of games is getting played at this store. Mm-hmm. And we want to impact the community at a given store. And right. So like the idea of finding somebody who like this is your baby, you're responsible to come in and hang out and build this community with this type of gamer.
Right. And that's the hard part.
Yeah.
Try to find somebody who actually wants to do this and wants to come alongside with us, alongside me to do this stuff, is just it's a big ask, because you're asking them to give up time that, you know, going to a game night every once a week is hard. I mean, even for me, yeah. I especially, you know, with things that might be changing, I'm going to be limited to the weekends. And so,
well, and I mean, that's also something that you need to be bringing out. Just, it is the time commitment, especially mm-hmm. because we're not just going to play the games.
Right.
It's yeah. easy to not have that commitment when all your commitment is I'm going to go and play this game with people.
Exactly.
Because that is a very confined kind of thing. Like, I go, I play games, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
But to do this, and this is something that we end up talking a lot about with people, is to do this as ministry, the games is when it starts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, you're not just there to go to table and leave. It's you're building something at the table that you can then use to build that relationship and really make something happen in the lives of other people.
Yeah, the games are just the tools to do what we, you know, to build the relationships, to build the, you know, all the stuff. All the stuffs.
So I'm very excited about this with you guys, especially because I get to live vicariously through you. Because both these guys, and I'm sure that a number of our listeners are in the same boat, that, like, these guys have game stores next to them. Yeah, Sean is a glutton with his six different game stores next to him.
I live to a big city, next to a big city, so that's going to happen.
I was explaining to them before we started recording, I said, I've wanted to do this for so long. I have desperately wanted to, like, get, you know, to adopt a game store, as it were. I wanted to do that so bad. The closest one to me is 40 minutes away from my house.
Yeah, and that's going to be the hardest part for me, is because we have, like, I think about six of them around here. So finding one, narrowing it down to which game store we're going to use is, that's, you know, something we're going to have to, you know, pray over and, you know, do as a team. And it's just, that's going to be the hardest part, I think, of finding out which one it is, because, you know, you don't know where you're going to be until God leads you there, you know?
And then you figure out, like, okay, well, you know, cause game stores are unique animals.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they
their own culture.
Yeah. I was just talking about this with somebody, the other day. I was just having a conversation about the nature of game stores. And I said, a lot of these game stores, there's a reason why they play Magic the Gathering there as much mm-hmm. as they do. Because yep. most game stores are going to have a night, at least one night, that's dedicated to Magic.
And if, yeah, that's how they make their money.
That's exactly yeah. right. If you ask the game store owners, why do you focus so heavy on Magic? And they're like, because we'd be shutting the doors mm-hmm. if we weren't selling this much Magic.
Yeah, and one of the stores we're looking at is they have Magic nightly.
Yeah.
Every night of the week. And it's just, they have one room that they just have a different, they have Standard, they have the Legacy, they have all the drafts, all these stuff every night. And it's, they have another room where they do board games, the miniature games.
Yeah, I think my shop might be an outlier. We used to play a lot of Magic there, but for some odd reason, I don't see a lot of Magic going on. Most of the stuff I see going on is 40K and RPGs.
Yeah.
So
that's becoming more and more of a thing, is that, especially with role playing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because as the popularity of role playing expands, especially, I mean, it's been growing just naturally in and of itself, but especially with the prominence of things like Critical Role, of the increasing number of role playing streams on Twitch.
Mm-hmm. Like, plus with the Adventurers League, you have the stores actually have incentive now to be running them more often.
Right. So there has been a distinct movement in role-playing. And then 40K, a lot of these guys, like, they go to play 40K at the store because they can get their own army. But at the same point, if you go to a store, you can have, depending on if that store focuses on it, you can have these epic terrain setups and
yeah.
have this really mm-hmm. cool thing that no one's going to have room for in their house.
Yeah, unless you're a diehard 40K player, you don't have your own table in your house. I mean, you had to find a room. Like, the Standard, it's changed since I started playing. It used to be 4-foot by 8-foot, but now it's 4-foot by 6-foot. Mm-hmm. But they're getting into smaller skirmish games again. So, like, Necromunda, Blood Bowl, things like that. And so it's going to be even smaller tables. But yeah, I mean, it going to the stores used to be the only way you could really get into a full-size game of 40K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think what's really cool about this, and this is, I mean, we've technically kind of made the turn, as it were, already, because this whole episode has been about this is how we do ministry with games, guys. But one thing that I particularly like about this idea, and why I was so excited when you brought this up, Sean, was that this is all about actively pursuing how to communicate in the language of the people you're trying to communicate with.
Right.
That so many times we want to bring our own words and our own dialect into this thing, like, oh, I want to talk to you about God and Jesus. I'm going to use all these words that you've never even realized before. Or I'm going to use all the, you know, cause there's, you know, it's not new to avoid the quote unquote church language.
Mm-hmm.
That's been around forever. Churches, I can't even tell you how many books and articles about how to avoid that stuff when doing ministry. So that concept isn't new, but the idea of trying to communicate using the language of the people as opposed to just not using the church language. The one about actually trying to learn how people talk and what they talk about and what's important to them.
Right.
Like, I love that, because when it comes to gamers, like, some of us are quote-unquote omni-gamers. We play everything. And so for some of us, it's easy to, like, oh, I might not know the specific term you're using for this game, but if you tell me it's like this, I'm gonna be like, okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And that's one. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
But a lot of these games, they're in their own little world so much that you have to know that game and that community, and know the inside jokes of that community and understand, like, there's a YouTube channel that I watch. Well, they're mostly streamers, but they put their stuff on YouTube, and that's how the guy with no open time in his schedule can watch them. They're called Loading Ready Run. Hilarious people, if not always family friendly. But they're like neck deep in Magic. And they actually produce, they're contracted with the folks at Wizards to make these comedy kind of shows about them playing Magic. And I haven't played Magic since the 90s. And so there are times when they'll be like, oh, this, ha ha, funny joke. And I'm like, I caught three words of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was funny, but I caught three words of that.
Yeah. And the way I am with Magic as it is, I've played Magic on and off for the past 10 years. And it's very, very hard to do just because of the money synced of it. And I'm just, and that's just, it's one of those things. It's a great game. It's just, it's hard now.
Yeah. I mean, and with like the way I play, I mean, I can't really, I mean, cause it, for me, it's so far in between times I actually get to play it. My decks become illegal, tournament illegal. And, you know, because after 2 years, I mean, you know, you can't play in tournaments with those older decks.
Well, all this is like, all of us come in and say, I know Magic. I know of Magic. I know the broad strokes of how to do that. But none of us can have a deep, intensive conversation with somebody who's doing that.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Nobody can have that conversation. None of us can have that conversation. At best, we can kind of limp along and say, oh, so that's like this.
Mm-hmm.
So much of the time when we're talking about, pick a topic, let alone anything that's about faith and religion and all that stuff. So many times, the running joke, I can't remember if it was an old Saturday Night Live sketch or something like that, but I just remember this particular moment became a meme. It was Steve Buscemi trying to act like he was playing a 12-year-old. And he walks up and he goes, hey, fellow kids, aren't we? Hey, kids, Future Mike here because, well, hindsight's 2020, and I have the power of the internet to be able to look up the origin of memes. So, yes, it is Steve Buscemi. He's actually playing a person who says that he's able to convince people that he's a high school kid. No. But the scene actually comes from 30 Rock. I know it's inconsequential, but if I don't mention it, somebody's going to make a comment. So the meme comes from 30 Rock. That's it. All right, Future Mike out. And so many times I think that's what we end up doing. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, I'm going to totally get in there and I'm going to talk to these people. I'm going to share Jesus and it's going to be great. We're going to connect and it all ends up with, hey there, fellow kids.
Yeah. And that's the biggest problem too. Cause if you can't connect with them on their terms, they're not going to connect you on your terms.
No.
Yeah, so it's, that's the hardest thing. That's part of doing something like this is you have to be invested in, you know, the people you're going to go live life with.
And the thing that I like is that, cause that almost sounds like it's like this huge barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. Like, how are we ever going to do this stuff? And to a degree it is, cause you do have to learn, but in most cases, now there's always going to be the outlier, but in most cases I've found that if you honestly want to get in, it might take you a while and you might be terrible at first, mm-hmm. but if you come to them and say, I really want to learn this. Gamers, I know this is hard to believe, want more people to play the game
yes.
that they want to play. Yep. If for no other reason, then they want to have more people to play the game they want to play with.
Exactly. Right.
And at any time if you go to a shop and somebody's sitting there with a game, and you look at them and go, will you teach me to play that? They will.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because they want to play. That's the whole point of buying the game is I want to play it.
And that's how you build a relationship. They're teaching you, and you get to teach them.
Yeah,
yeah. That concept alone, when we bring that into the faith realm, the idea of they're teaching you something,
mm-hmm.
like for a lot of people, that makes them uncomfortable. I love talking to people from all over the spectrum. I love talking to people as long as they're not, you know, angry, angsty.
Yeah.
I love talking to people about you name it. I've had amazing conversations with I've actually had conversations with what's it called? People who actually still believe in the Norse pantheon. They exist. Mm-hmm. That's a thing.
Yeah, my brother's one.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like I love having those conversations with people. I love having conversations with people from other faiths. Occasionally he does listen to our podcast, and so I have no idea if he's listening to this one, but I love talking to Jack Birkenstock, over at the Bodhana Group, who is Buddhist. Jack is a phenomenal guy, and we have conversations about faith and whatever, and what he believes and what I believe and where the overlap is in the Venn diagram and where the differences are. I love having those conversations, and it's the idea that I actually had a guy who was asking, he goes, look, I have to write a paper and I need mm-hmm. somebody who knows about Buddhism to explain to me, you know, how I do this. And I'm like, Jack, would you like to illuminate? Because I could talk to you about the stuff that I've read, but like you live this. And so it's really cool to be able to have those discussions and learn stuff from each other. And the idea that we're open to the idea of learning from each other allows us to have an actual relationship.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that's also a very important fact about the tavern.
Yeah.
As well. Because yep. tavern's not just Christian.
There, every once in a while we'll see somebody post and I'm like, look, I'm not going to put this person down because they're not doing anything wrong. But I'm like, you're saying that as if you think everyone in here is on the same yeah. page as you.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, we've got Buddhists, we've got Christians of every denomination, we have atheists. I don't know if we have any Muslims yet, but you know, they're welcome.
Not that I know of, but heck, I want people to always feel like they have a place at the tavern. This is something that I posted recently, and it's been a big thing for me. I mean, heck, you can literally see it on our website if you read through some of my posts on our philosophy of evangelism. But it's the idea that people cannot be viewed as projects.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
People, if your relationship, the sole purpose of you having a relationship with this person is that you can have that gospel moment and get them to Christ.
Right.
You don't actually have a relationship with that person.
It's not a friend.
It's a project.
Yep. And that's a dangerous, that's like the biggest thing I'm worried about starting this venture is people might take this as a project and not actually, you know.
Right. Build those, and it's something that bothers me about the way that, And I will totally admit to this myself. For a long time, this was my concept of evangelism as well. It's the idea of I'm doing this to get them to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why our language is entirely focused on the concept of relationship is that, yes, we do want them to find Jesus. We do want people to hear the gospel and turn to God. Why would we not? Like, if we actually believe that God is who he says he is, why would we not want people to know that?
Right.
Why would we not want people to believe that? It's absolutely important for us that that's the case. But we're not building relationships to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We're building the relationship because we honestly care about people because God honestly cares about people.
Right.
True.
Our intentionality is not about getting them to point B. It's about building that relationship that will hopefully demonstrate that.
Yeah.
That will live that out and give words to it, have moments where we have those conversations, but not to get to that point. Because the second it becomes about I'm friends with you so that you become a Christian means that what if they don't? If your entire relationship is built on getting them to that point and they don't get to that point, how long do you hold on to that relationship before you stop? Because I promise you, you're going to get wore out. It's the interesting thing about missionaries, because we love, and this is something that I've experienced, not only because I often refer to when people ask what my ministry is, I say I'm a tabletop missionary. Like I get it, but at the same point, I've talked with a lot of people who have done intercultural missions, mm-hmm. whether that's, you know, a specific quote unquote people group within their own country or going overseas. In any of those regards, I've heard over and over again stories about, you know, we love to promote and missions organizations love to talk about how somebody went to such and such a location and they were there for 10 years and nobody came to Christ. And then all of a sudden, boom, like 300 people out of nowhere just found Jesus. And I'm like, I want to know about year 5. If it took 10, I want to hear about year 5, because I promise you in year 5, that mission organization is like, we're paying you to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
We love the big story at the end. I've often said, especially on Bard and Bible, but also here, that we love the happy ending and we love rushing to the happy ending. We love hearing about how God did the cool thing. But we rarely want to sit on the fact that it took an awfully long time with an awful lot of pain and questioning whether what they're doing has any value at all. And so I love the ability for missions to be this concept.
Mm-hmm.
That you are not doing this relationship building to get them to Jesus. That is our prayer and our constant hope. Right. But the relationships are the valuable in and of themselves, whether or not they cross that line. And our ministry is not just about getting them across the line. It's literally every day we show these people God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I promise you that it's really funny to me because it gets people thinking weird things sometimes when I say there have been people of other faith groups who minister to me. I know. It's weird.
Well, you know, it happens to me too.
Mm-hmm. But
I learned how to pour into people from a Buddhist.
Yeah.
Because I loved his philosophy so much that about pouring into people that I try to pour into people now. And, you know, and I try to help them the best I can, like he tries to help others the best he can. And it's because of another religion.
Mm-hmm.
So
relationships are messy, they're complicated, they're weird, and real relationships, honest, real relationships, have people from different places, different states of mind, different everything coming together. My favorite quote, and again, you can read this on our website. I cite it in one of the posts I put up about evangelism. But oddly enough, it's from a movie that's based off of a play. I don't know. It's called The Big Kahuna. And it's a really great movie, though not always family friendly. Again, I always like to put the clarifying statement on that in case anyone takes my recommendation just blindly. But there's one part where the character played by Danny DeVito looks at this other guy who's this typical straight-laced, like, Southern Baptist, like that guy, you know, we all know that guy. And Danny DeVito's character looks at him, this grizzled old salesman, and he looks at him and he says, "You selling Jesus is no more different than Larry selling industrial lubricant. The minute you take a conversation and twist it, you are no longer having a conversation. You are having a sales pitch. And you are no longer a human being. You are a marketing rep."
Exactly.
And I love this idea of going into the game stores. I love that, yeah, we are going to do it to try and show people Jesus. There's going to be, hopefully, those moments where we have conversations about God and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, it is all about building the relationship regardless of whether that happens or not, because we don't have the ability ourselves to make people get to that point. No matter how on point and stellar we are, we don't have the ability to get anybody to that place. So the relationships that we build are valuable in and of the fact that they are relationships that we've built. All right, y'all, I think we are going to end the episode there. I'm ecstatic that we got to talk about this stuff. I do love being able to just bust out an episode where it literally is just us talking about all the cool stuff we get to do.
Very good.
So, one thing, I will kind of drop one little bit of news at the end here. As some of you might have known, we currently have a contest running. I mentioned Bard and Bible, which is my devotional podcast in the Inroads family of podcasts. It is basically me sitting down for a half an hour talking about the Bible and Jesus and stuff, without all the clutter of, you know, actually talking about other stuff besides that. And, I realized as I was recording this last one that I've been doing it for a year now, which seems ridiculous.
It just feels like yesterday you started it.
Right?
Discussing it with us.
Right? No, it's been a year now. And to kind of commemorate that, and to commemorate the fact that I still have a copy of Commissioned to give away. Thank you, Pat and Kat Lysite from over at Kara Games. We're doing a contest. I am going to make you at least partially listen to that episode because I love y'all, but I also want people to listen to Bard and Bible because I work really hard on it.
I can't win it.
Yeah, you can't win it. Sorry, no. Inroads staff is not eligible. But if you go listen to the most recent episode of Bard and Bible, trust me, there won't be another one. If you're listening to this current episode of GSP, there won't be another one for a while of Bard and Bible. I believe it's episode 23. If you listen to that, you hear me talk about the Simple Theologians Club. And the Simple Theologians Club, we always evoked the meeting every time the same way. I want to get one entry, I need you to either have a video or a picture of you evoking the meeting. Again, I say it over and over again in that episode of Bard and Bible, how to do that. If you want a bonus entry into the potential to get commissioned, what you need to do is either, if it's a picture, you can kind of attach it alongside, or if it's a video, you can make it part of that video, and you can just give us a story about what our ministry means to you. How has Inroads, how has Game Store Profits, how has Bard and Bible, any of that stuff is eligible. Give me a cool story that I can show people who ask, what does this ministry do? So if you do anything like that, short, long, I don't care. I want to hear your stories about how this ministry has impacted your life. That's a bonus entry. At the end of the month, I'm going to take everybody who's done this and I'm going to randomly select one winner to get the copy of Commissioned, and I'm going to give three runner-up prizes of Pretense by our friend Jason Tagmeyer from Button Shy. Jason gave me a whole bunch of the boxed editions of Pretense, and I want to give them out and get them out into the world because that game is silly, ridiculous fun. So, again, if you go out and listen to episode 23 of Bard and Bible, do a video or a picture of you evoking the meeting and post it anywhere. You can post it in the tavern. You can send it to me in an email. You can put it on Twitter or Facebook. You just have to, if especially if you do Twitter or Facebook, give it the hashtag of the Simple Theologians Club, or Simple Theologians Club, no, the Simple Theologians Club. If you do that, I will be able to find it. That said, I hope to see you guys all at TavernCon, anybody who can make it. If you can't, the next big kind of gaming-related shenanigans, which we're not doing anything official at it because it's that time of year and we already have a lot going on, but International Tabletop Day is coming out in April, so I hope you all have fun at that. We'll be talking about that again, I'm pretty confident. And as always, remember that God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.